From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Oh, hey there, children of the night. Welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and subs all everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is not my wonderful producer, Cal Panic. And alongside of me, as always, is not my ever wonderful co-host, Anthony, nor Steve, nor anybody else, really. I am on my own this week due to the pandemic going around the world right now. I am not recording this episode at WJOB Studios. We are not doing a live episode at all this week. WJOB needed to close so they can be available for emergency broadcast systems and all of those things. Before we begin, I just want to throw my heart out to everybody that's suffering right now from virus illness and just the outcomes of everything. It's a scary time to be alive, but I didn't want to cancel the show and I didn't want to put out something for an archive. I wanted to save that for a dire emergency. In my true belief, I feel like that everybody right now needs a little bit of escapism, and my children of the night, you guys, you all deserved a little escapism and a little bit of entertainment. My show is meant to scare you. My show is meant to entertain you. I'm not going to try to scare you guys with virus talk, and I'm not even going to talk about it. So this week I'm recording in a very special place. I am actually recording where our friends at Ghostly Podcast Central, they were very nice enough to let me come in and record. And because I couldn't have Count Panic and because I couldn't have Anthony with me, I had to settle on probably the 40th best person that could come co-host my show. Everybody, this is Pat from Ghostly.
Hey, guys. First of all, so dire emergency, is that just an emergency that happens in Dyer, Indiana?
You're the only one that might have popped like two people that understood right? That reference.
And yeah, I was going to say, what am I, chopped liver or something?
Pat's co-hosted an episode of Bob After Dark before, but that was like a straight, we're just going to tell ghost stories. We're not debating anything. But now I'm throwing Pat into a situation that is the farthest right from anything he probably ever talks about on Ghostly. But Pat, tell the fans a little bit about yourself or like the three people that don't know who you are or don't know what Ghostly Podcast is.
Yeah, so my history is that around the age of 13, my father passed away, and I got really interested in the occult stuff. Like, I became pagan, mostly druid, you know, those kind of things. And I was a firm believer. In fact, I was the top of the believer chart at one point, I would say. I had an online pagan community where people could come and ask questions and find out valuable information, but then one day I became a skeptic. And so I am your co-host in this, is a skeptic.
Yeah, exactly. I'm ready to debate Pat on microclimates and just old houses that creak.
Yeah, or new houses that you think are haunted that are not.
No, I just want to say thank you so much for having me, and thank you for letting me come into Ghostly headquarters to record this episode. It's great, and I just really appreciate you being there to want to be my co-host. That means more to me than you possibly know.
Well, one person once told me that paranormal podcasts need to stick together.
Man, who told you that load of nonsense?
I don't know, but because of that, I am always willing to give a hand.
Thank you, Pat. Now, if this is your first time ever listening to Bob After Dark, how the show works is we talk a little bit about some weird, spooky, creepy, science-y type news that fascinates me. And then we move on to talk about the lore of the week. Because we're in March, we're doing Fae lore this month, where we talk about everything about the Fae, fairies, brownies, not the pastry, and other things of that nature, Celtic lore more or less that deals with the Fae. And this week we're talking about somebody very special that I'm almost positive all of you guys have ever heard of, the Tooth Fairy.
I have all my teeth.
Oh, but do you remember leaving your tooth under a pillow when you were a kid?
Yeah, I do.
So, I mean, there's actual, like, paganistic lore behind it, but we're not going to get into that just yet,
because
we're going to cover some spooky news stories of the week.
But I have a question for you about the tooth fairy before anything.
Oh, Forrest, what do you got?
How much did you get for your teeth?
Usually like a buck or two.
I'd get $5 a tooth.
$5 a tooth?
I was like trying to pull teeth out at that point.
I might have gotten like a Lego set, like a not like a big one, but like a small.
How did they put that under your pillow?
I don't know, man. Tooth fairy must have straight up pulled me up. But yeah, I might have gotten stuff like that. But
you have long hair, so they could do that.
I didn't have long hair when I was a kid. I had long hair when I was really, really little, about 4 or 5 years old, and then I got into preschool, and my dad's like, we have to cut that off because people were confusing me, you know, as a little girl and whatever, and they were just like, no.
I've always thought of you as a little girl.
Oh, thanks, Matt. I appreciate it. I'm glad to hear that I'm still getting my chops busted, even though I don't have Anthony here giving me chops about crumbs on my shirt and what kind of pastries I've been stealing. But
you do have some crumbs on your shirt. Thanks. I was going to say that.
You know, Anthony, I know you're listening to this episode down the fact, and I just want you to know that Pat's notes right in front of him are all of just your greatest hits of picking fun at me during the show.
Absolutely. We're going to talk about leprechauns. And
specifically from Mobile, Alabama.
Of course. That's the only one I know of.
All right. So let's start off the show with some spooky news of the week. And it's actually for the first time in Bob After Dark history ever, myself and my co-host came with the same exact news story.
Right.
I'll tell you, most of the time, Anthony doesn't come prepared. He usually will defend himself, but he's not here to defend himself. So I'm going to pick on him a little bit. So this is the first beautiful thing.
I have that written down.
Do you have Australian lines in there about being fans of sand?
Yeah.
No, this is the first time ever. Usually me and Anthony don't communicate about the show whatsoever before.
Okay.
We talk about the topic and we want our raw opinions on things.
Yeah.
And then usually we cut to panic to do the hashtag panics take. So tonight I'll let you talk about your story and then you're gonna ask for my take and then I'll tell you my story and I want your take.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So because you're my guest, maybe I'm your guest. Since you're my guest, I'll let you go first.
So what was weird though, is that this isn't really like ghostly or anything like that or anything paranormal,
no.
To my belief, at least.
No, it's still
interesting,
though.
And we both had the same story.
We did have the same exact story.
So, yeah, I was scrolling through Facebook, and I saw a article about a woman's hands that were transplanted. First of all, I thought that was the coolest concept.
I thought it was a fake news article at first.
Yeah.
Like, I thought I stumbled into, like, a science fiction thing. I didn't know hand transplants were a thing.
I didn't know either. Mm. And I guess in India they are, you know, and they did this transplant. They gave this woman man hands because that was the cadaver that they had. And the pigment was slightly different.
Yes.
You know, it was much darker on her man hands. And but they started to change colors and they almost precisely match her skin color now.
Yeah. And it's insane how many people go into, how much work it goes into one of these hand transplants.
Right.
They had a team of 12 anesthesiologists and 16 surgeons on hand to do this. No pun intended. I had no idea. And I was like, do they just slap a hand on a hand and call it a day? No, apparently there's a lot that goes into this. She was also, there were 500 people on the list waiting for the organs, but she happened to be in the right place at the right time. The gentleman who died at the same hospital, he didn't die. He was pronounced brain dead and they pulled the plug. He was a donor and he literally died right when she needed the hand. She got into a nasty car accident and the doctors were like,
let's do what you got to do.
And the insane thing about it was it took her time and she's still not without nerve feelings, but she's working on it.
Yeah.
She's able to almost mobily use the hands perfectly.
Except the thumbs.
Yeah.
She has issues with the thumbs, you know. Some of the possible reasons for this is melon.
Microclimate.
Yeah, microclimates, obviously. Melon, but actually I just was reading that another thing is could be the muscles. That she was obviously like the man was probably lifting more than what she could. Do you even lift, bro?
Sure.
You know, and and so she's using less of her muscles or different muscles, and that might be causing it too. They have no idea.
No, this is as science-y, like crazy fiction stuff as I've ever heard. Like I've heard brain transplants and heart transplants, and I thought that was like the future. But the fact that people can legitimately take someone else's hands and put them on somebody else's body is, in all meaning of the word, is a medical miracle.
Well, because the retina transplants are the ones that are the most like crazy.
You think so?
The retina holds memories.
Yeah.
So sometimes people will see things that...
Is that your explanation behind ghosts? Everybody,
all ghosts.
All ghost sightings. Pat is a proclaimed skeptic. We talked about at the beginning of the show. So if a retina transplant happens, that's your reasoning. Pat goes to do an investigation, interviews somebody that saw a ghost. It's like, you had a retina transplant?
No, I just assumed that they did. I don't even ask them.
Oh, my God. But no, it's amazing because the way they're like... prosthetics are, they're even getting better now, and yes, they have like the biometric ones where they have feeling, but the fact that you could just take living cells and just slap them onto something else blows my mind.
There is a transplant called an xenotransplant. Have you ever heard of that?
I have not.
That is where actual cells are transplanted, which is just like beyond this world.
That's amazing.
All
right, so let's move on to my story, which is astronomers were using a map of dark energy to see how far out they can see into space clearly and in focus. And this is the first time ever that astronomers have had a clear idea of what Pluto and Neptune look like. And they were able to see past our solar system, right over the border where Pluto ends and the next solar system begins. And they found 316 minor planets, and only 139 of them they knew about before. So all the other ones are brand new minor planets that they're discovering.
Wow.
Which gives more reason to believe that we're probably not alone in this universe. I think we're at the point now, even in 2020, and I think we've talked about this before, where you're more inept to believe in something extraterrestrial than you do paranormal.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I do believe that there is life out there. I don't know if that life is here, and I don't believe that they drive around in UFOs or whatever. I mean, and if there is life here, I believe it's microscopic.
Okay.
More than anything like bacterial and stuff like that.
I think in the year 2020, it's probably not the best thing to think that we're alone in this universe. I feel like there's a very tiny way of thinking, and I don't care if you're religious or not. You're being almost kind of like center-minded. If you really think that the universe, which is ever expanding still, we have, you know, they think that's what's going on, at least, that the universe is still expanding from the Big Bang, and that there's infinite amount of possibilities out there. And you mean to tell me not one of those contains intelligent life? And do I believe in UFOs and the whole, like, you know, abduction stuff? I do, to an extent. But why would they want to come here and study us? We're horrible in the legitimate sense. Like, I really think that human beings are like the worst things that's probably out there in the universe. And they're like, what do we want to deal with that for?
Well, you know, I'm going to do a little plug for my podcast.
Oh, sure.
Is that actually on this episode of Ghostly that's coming out, we are going to be talking about the Perrin family, which is Conjuring.
Conjuring, yep.
And Andrea Perrin wrote three books, a trilogy of books about her experiences there. And in there, she talks about when she was about 12 years old that a UFO came and that the aliens came out to specifically talk to her.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else but her. Like, they pointed her out of anybody else. So I just thought that kind of correlates a little bit. There's a lot of people that believe in it, and you know, I have no evidence for or against.
No, I don't either, and I don't claim to, but the fact that we're seeing all these minor planets that's literally right outside our solar system, which in the cosmic scheme of things isn't very far away.
Yeah.
So it's very possible that just right over the border there's a potential of life. I really think that.
Absolutely. There's potential, at least.
Absolutely.
Like, I don't know if anybody can say for sure. And if you ever said for sure that there is, then I think if you don't have an actual experience, you know, you're going to be a little agnostic towards that belief. You're going to have question and stuff. And if you don't, there's something wrong, I would say. you know, you should go into things with both sides at least.
Nope, I'm just a blind believer. Put up my blinders.
You're not.
Yeah, orbs, every orb photo that comes out, every apparition, I'm all about it. It's a ghost. several dozen ghosts.
There are some things that you don't believe in. Like the mobile Alabama leprechaun.
Thank you. How many times can we use normal Bob After Dark lingo and jokes here in this episode?
Right?
You did do an episode of Bob After Dark before.
I did, yeah. And yeah, I was in the studio.
You were in the studio. And so you got an idea. And I think you listen to my show sometimes.
Yeah. No, yeah, I do.
I listen to every episode of Ghostly religiously.
I am a huge fan.
Oh, thank you, Pat.
And people might not know this, but I get privy to your episodes before they go out on the podcast world.
You are more or less what kind of producer would you be at the top level? You're like my executive producer to a sense.
Maybe.
You do. You get all my episodes before they come out, and then it's like, Pat, can you know, here you go.
Yeah. So I have privy to listen to everything before it even goes out to the general public.
Oh, geez. All right. So let's dive right into the lure of the week.
All right.
All right. So lately I've been kind of trying to do a story before before I dive into the lore. I might have stole that from a certain podcast that I happen to fancy a lot. It's not as good as Rebecca's, and I don't have a good voice like Rebecca. I have a decent voice, but I don't have a Rebecca voice. I don't have a following for that. But I did write out a little ditty. So if you don't mind, we're going to dive into the fae lore
and sing that ditty.
All right. Let's say that you're a little kid. And you're on the playground playing dodgeball, and you're the very klutzy kid like I was, and someone tosses a ball at you, and blam, you get hit in the mouth. You start tasting blood. Not good. And probably if you're a little kid like Bob, you start panicking. In your mouth, you feel something moving around, only to discover it's a tooth. You go to the nurse's office, they rinse your mouth out with some salt water, and boom. You're ready to go home and get your shiny nickel. So you go home, you do your homework, you watch your whatever TV you're going to do. You go to bed and you put the tooth under your pillow. The next morning, an offering has been made in return for your lost tooth. Now you know who visited you. It was the Tooth Fairy. But little did you know that she has a very, very dark past.
She does, yeah.
Yeah, did you like that?
I did like that. That was very good.
That might have been actually from some personal experience on my end. I definitely have lost a tooth in very horrible ways in my life, probably by my own self-like doings. When I was a little kid, I couldn't stand a loose tooth.
You know, I had one that would not come out. And it was dangling. Like, it just would not come out.
Did you ever do the string on the doorknob trick?
I was willing to try anything, but it still wouldn't come out. I had to go to the dentist, and the thing I hate the most is when somebody lies to me. And the dentist lied to me because I always ask, is this going to hurt? And the dentist said, no, not at all, and proceeded to take pliers into my mouth and yank the tooth out, and it hurt. I still feel it.
Oh, do you?
No, not really. But I mean, it sounds better for me to say that. Though,
phantom pains, many. How old are you? 66, right? So that would have been about 55 years ago. I'm picking on you a little bit.
I'm closer to 66 than,
Jeez. No, so I, growing up, I always lost my teeth in very like embarrassing ways. This is a true story. So my front tooth and why it came in a little on the crooked side is because I got tired of it being wiggly. So I took a Lego. And I just popped it out. And I remember being a little kid and going up to my mom being like, Mommy. And she looks, she's like, oh my God, there's so much blood. I remember one time I had like, it was like an Oreo cookie or something. I had at a buffet. It was like pudding. It was an Oreo pudding with like a little cook. I'm sitting eating this pudding and I bite into it. And I'm like, Dad, this chocolate chip's not breaking. So I'm like, well, all right, take it out, see what it is. Take it out, there's a whole tooth there. It wasn't even loose. Yeah, I'm telling you, man. I had the worst luck with teeth growing up. But I'll tell you what, because I had the worst luck with teeth, I always had the best luck with the Tooth Fairy.
Oh.
Now, growing up, every night, every time I get a new tooth, I'd be like, yeah. I put it under my pillow.
It was exciting, right?
It was probably like the most exciting thing. And you don't think about it when you're a kid. I don't even think about it now, really. You're going to leave an offering of your own body part And as I was writing up my notes, this is the weird, like, dawned on me in 2020 at my ripe age of 29. I was like, this is kind of a weird thing. There's got to be, and that's the reason why I picked the Tooth Fairy. There's two reasons. I'll explain why I wanted to cover her this week. The first one was because I was thinking about this whole Tooth Fairy thing. And I'm like, how strange is it that parents buy into the whole culture of the Tooth Fairy, knowing fully well that you're offering up a body part to this otherworldly entity to more or less like
appease
and bring you an offering in return?
Yeah.
That's so strange.
But what does she do with the teeth?
Well, it's a good question. Some people, some stories say that she grinds it up. Some people say that she doesn't do anything at all. But I have a little bit of history about the Tooth Fairy.
Oh, nice.
So the idea behind losing your teeth has actually been something of ritual for a long time. In the Middle Ages in England, it was said that you were supposed to burn your baby teeth as you lost them. Ugh. Because if you didn't, you would have to suffer through the afterlife looking for your baby teeth because you never let go. So you were supposed to burn them.
That would stink.
It would. Have you ever actually like bit down on a cracked tooth or something?
Oh, yeah.
It tastes awful.
Yeah, it does. Definitely.
And I believe, what's his name? The cannibal. Milwaukee. I can't believe
it. Cannibal?
No, the cannibal from Milwaukee.
Oh, Dahmer.
Dahmer. Yeah. Dahmer always said the teeth were the worst part. He would pop those out. But
nothing like good Dahmer reference in a story. Yeah.
Well, apparently, the true crime podcasters do it all the time. Right? I know I'm not a true crime guy, but I feel like I fit in somewhere. But you were supposed to burn them so you wouldn't be suffering through the afterlife. And did you know that Vikings would actually pay children for their lost teeth?
Mm.
And they would wear them on their necklaces when they went into battle. So
it'd be like, here's what my kid did.
Well, no, they believed it as a symbol of good luck.
Wow.
So it was not uncommon for a Viking to go out and pillage an area, and you'd look up and see this big burly human with this long dreaded hair and this big axe.
And little baby teeth.
And little baby teeth.
Because I figured it out, though.
Okay, what is it, Pat?
So the Tooth Fairy is actually the middleman selling the teeth to them, so they don't need to have to. So she just pays slightly less than what they paid for it.
I mean, it's something to buy into, but I'm gonna ruin that for you.
Oh no,
I'm gonna ruin that for you. Trigger warning to all of our parents out there that listen to the show with their kids. This is probably a good time
to put them to bed
and move forward in the episode. I'm not talking about adult related content, so maybe your kid's over like 13, maybe you're catching my drift, but maybe it's now a time for your younger listeners no longer to listen past this point.
I'll
give you guys a couple seconds there. I mean, I'm going to still talk about stuff before that, but I wanted to give you guys a little buffer. And even in the medieval times in Europe, it was said to hide the teeth because if a witch got a hold of them, they would have complete power over you.
Yeah, that I have heard, actually.
And it's, you know, and it's not just teeth. It's something about hair, too.
It is.
You know,
it's about anything.
It
is. If you had a finger or something, it would do the same thing.
Saliva. There's a lot of stories with witches being able to control people via anything. You ever hear the old adage about voodoo dolls and how they, you know, yep, put a little bit of hair? But same thing was said about teeth.
Well, this is more on the voodoo side of witchcraft.
But there was not a whole lot of voodoo magic being practiced in medieval England.
Well, there was black magic.
Oh, sure. But either way, I don't want to give the witchy community, because it's some of my biggest demographic, I don't want to give them a bad name.
No.
Witches, I really don't think you're collecting teeth anymore. I think that's just most of the, you know, the oddity shows?
Like, yes.
I think those are more or less the fans that do those kinds of things now. They collect the teeth for that fact, because then they sell them as art pieces, which is really strange.
It is. But, I mean, let's be honest, there's extremists in every religion.
Oh,
right?
Sure. Absolutely.
Every religion has their kooks. So maybe there are one or two. I don't know. I don't want to see the teeth, though.
No. Okay.
That would creep me out.
If you haven't gotten rid of your children yet or turned the episode off and moved and come back, I'm going to blow it for you. Just like the modern image of Santa Claus, the modern image of the Tooth Fairy was created back in the 20s by not only your favorite company in the world, Coca-Cola.
Wow.
Yeah. Coca-Cola came up with the concept of the tooth fairy.
Because they were taking out all the teeth with the sugar.
Well, that, and they wanted to give the kids something to hold on to that wouldn't freak them out about losing teeth, like teeth pain. They wanted to give them...
That's cool.
They wanted to give them a coping mechanism for that fear. So they came up with the concept of the tooth fairy, and they really were pushing parents to kind of follow along with that. Little did they know that the tooth fairy, even though that there's no such thing as the tooth fairy.
Wait, what?
Yeah, unfortunately. There's no specific creature called the tooth fairy. There are lots of creatures that have been celebrated throughout our history that can hold the adage to what we now know and we celebrate in the culture of the tooth fairy. And even to the old, you know, the old pagans, as I always say, it always goes back to those pagans. The pagans were even believing in things like the tooth fairy thousands of years ago, but they didn't name it the tooth fairy. In fact, losing your teeth was a protection, but I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself there. So I wanted to talk about three different incarnations of what people celebrated losing your teeth before we get to the Fae and the Celtic backgrounds and pagan backgrounds. And I'm calling them tooth-taking creatures because they're strange.
Taking creatures. Okay.
Before I begin, I just would like to say that I do not speak French and I do not speak Spanish.
Yet.
I'm going to butcher this so bad.
I can't wait.
Oh, this is going to be brutal.
Are you going to do it with like a French accent?
Absolutely not.
Oh. Come on. All right. Vipati.
Then you could try this one.
No.
Excellent. So one of these figures is actually known as La Petite Cerise.
Well, that sounds good to me.
Thank you. I appreciate that. What the La Petite was, it was a small French mouse. There's this magical mouse that knew when kids lost their teeth, you would lose a tooth, put it under your pillow. This mouse would come and take the tooth and then leave you an offering in return. Wow. And they said that the tooth would then go into another mouse that lost its tooth. They would just like transplant it. That's what the La Petite would do.
Interesting.
And that's not even like the only mouse-related tooth creature there is.
Wow.
Because in 17th century France, they had Rapticio Perez.
Okay.
Which was another tooth-related mouse creature. I'm sure they probably borrowed the lore from that bit of lore. But you would exchange your tooth, and this mouse would come and bring you an offering of food. So it wasn't monetary and it wasn't like a gift, because the La Petite would leave small toys sometimes and monetary. The legend goes both ways.
Wow.
But Raticio would leave food. So he'd leave behind an orange or an apple or a bit of candy. I always thought that was strange. Now here comes the horrifying one, because as always, lore always has its horrifying
one. Can we just
stick
with those two? I mean, I'm good with those two, except for a mouse going around my face to get... that's weird.
It's a magical mouse. It would scamper around and lift itself up. And in France to this day, you can actually go to the La Petite Museum, and they have a whole museum dedicated like folk art and to teeth in this mouse.
Wow.
And you can go. I was looking it up. I did a virtual tour online. I'm like, it's very interesting. I'm very impressed. I do not live in Finland.
You don't?
I do not.
Okay.
I do not speak the Finnish language
yet.
At all.
Not yet.
This one's probably going to be the worst butchering. And I'm warning all, because I do have fans that listen from out there in that neck of the woods. I do know that. And I am so sorry. But there is a Finnish troll that relates to the tooth mythos as well.
Hmm.
Hammaspekeko.
Sounds fine to me.
Thank you.
I am
that
not looking at the word.
Hammaspikko. And I did the little enunciation thing, and that's the best I could do.
Okay.
But this is the worst part of the story.
Uh-oh.
It's a troll who would be drawn in by a child leaving sugar on their teeth without brushing them after, let's say, they eat a piece of candy or something. And this troll would kidnap the kid and drill the teeth out or pull them out.
Wow. Wow, that is terrifying, actually.
And it would give the troll would give the kid back. And when the parents would be like, oh, you should have probably brushed your teeth, or this troll wouldn't have shown up to...
Womp, womp, womp.
And the wild thing about that legend is it still goes on to this day, like, rampantly. And how it would go is the parents would eventually say, you know, they would realize, oh, I brushed my teeth without sugar and I'm not being attacked by this troll creature. They would get the older kids to pass that legend on to the younger kids. I guess dental hygiene is a big thing in Finland.
Well, think of the boogeyman.
Which incarnation?
I'm just saying that, you know, we still do stuff like this to children. Children are naive. They believe anything.
I'm 29 and I think I'm still naive. It's like, hey, Bob, did you know that if you break a fingernail and you leave it under your pillow, Pat from Ghostly is going to come to your house and leave you a nickel for it? I'd probably believe you and leave my fingernail under my pillow.
Not in this day and age. I am practicing social distancing, so I will not be coming. We'll send it virtually.
Mail Pat at 123 Ghostly Street. Now, before I move on to the witchy side of things, okay, because there's always the witchy side of things. And then I swear most of the legends and the lore and the supernatural that I cover, and especially when I get to the holidays and stuff, every holiday has a pagan background. And every monster, most ghost stories, these people were dealing with thousands of years ago. In your background, did you ever hear of the tooth being a power symbol?
No. But witchcraft has such a long history,
sure,
that we're talking that this could have been, you know, before the concept of Christ or Christ was born.
Sure.
So that could predate a lot of things. So it really, no, I've never heard of that.
Well, I want to talk about the Fae and the Fae lore behind it and the actual magic side. And I'm not talking magic with an IC, I'm talking magic with a K.
Yep.
And you know, when you talk about magic with a K and you specify that, you know, you're talking about some serious stuff.
Yeah.
So as far as the Fae lore is concerned, the Tooth Fairy is actually a combination of several mysterious and protection rituals used in very, 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 very old pagan rite. Some believe that trolls and Fae would come and kidnap children right out of their cribs. And that's actually something that is still believed to this day, in the year 2020. I have friends and I have believers that listen to the show that truly believe that Fae are still very much a legitimate threat in the world.
Yeah.
And I mean, you look at stories like the Mobile Alabama Leprechaun, and I always refer to that as my favorite paranormal story because that is such a good case study of mass hysteria.
Yes.
Ever. So people still believe that Fae are a legitimate common problem, and people believe that when, you know, kidnap stories aren't resolved, people believe that Fae are coming in and kidnapping them. So, I mean, it's not just something that people believed in then. If you go and go look outside and you see a circle of mushrooms, people believe that's
fairy ring.
It's a fairy ring.
Well, in parts of England, Ireland, Scotland, there are mounds that they believe are fairy mounds. And, you know, although they say it jokingly, hey, that's a fairy mound, they will not move that.
No.
They will not dig there. So they do believe in it. They just think it's silly. Yep. But they do believe still.
Yep. There was, and the reason why I picked this and the reason why I'm talking about this now, especially with the kidnapping and the tormenting children, there is a movie called Don't Be Afraid of the Dark. Have you ever seen it?
Actually, I have the book in the other room right now. Rebecca, my co-host on Ghostly, she read it. I did not. That was a little bit
Do you know how to read,
my
Pat?
Time. I have seen hieroglyphics and I could decipher some things. No, I know how to read.
I'm picking on you.
I mean, if you get some historical book or something, I probably read it.
Him a periodical. Pat wants to read the amazingly boring history lesson books. That's what
I would
wants.
Love that.
Pat's all his eyes just lit up. He's
I
like,
would love
what
that.
Do you what do you have?
Yes. But you know, I used to be a really big fan of Tolkien.
He wrote the Lord of the Rings.
He wrote a lot more than that.
Nah, I just know the Lord of the Rings. I'm not going to lie to you.
I've read a lot of things that his son actually finished for him.
Mm.
And yeah, so I mean, I'm a big reader. Just no,
sure.
That was a little bit after my time.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah. I didn't know it was based off a book, so thank you for telling me.
Yes,
but the Queen of the Night sat me down and she says, "You know, hey, I got an idea for you. This for Feylor Month." And I'm like, "What do you got?" And she's like, "The Tooth Fairy." No, and
yeah.
She's like, "No, really." So we sit down and we're watching this movie, and I'll tell you, like, outside of the paranormal, like the horror community is kind of like my other like big fandom, right? Mm-hmm. I know a lot about horror films and stuff. Movies like that, horror movies don't bother me. They don't make me feel uncomfortable because I'm more afraid of the living than I am the dead or the undead or anything like that. That movie made me feel uncomfortable. And the basic gist of the movie is this little girl crosses a fairy ring, goes down into a cellar, and finds this like fireplace portal thing sealed up. And these little whispers, these quick little whispers are talking to her to come unseal them. They were sealed with like iron bolts. And the whole rest of the movie, it's she's being tormented by these little things. They're these little fey creatures. Hmm. And they don't like fly. It's not like fairies you think about when you're watching like Thumbelina or something.
Sure.
And they're like more like rats. And she crossed over this threshold and yada, yada. And I was thinking about it throughout this entire movie. I'm like, this is horrifying. And that's what made me pick the topic of this week's episode. And it actually even like remotely made me start looking into this thing. Cause I look at the Feylor stuff, but I don't know how many people are still like, people are superstitious about it, but how many people are actually afraid? Now, truth be told, I actually sleep with an iron crowbar next to my bed. I still do that to this day. I've been doing it since I was younger because of Feylor stuff. Yeah, I sleep with an iron crowbar next to my bed because
I mean,
of
we can
stuff.
Get you better weapons. For
trust me when I say I have better weapons.
Oh, okay.
But against Fey particularly. And I always thought it was silly, but like ever since I was a little boy, like you hear about the Fey stuff and I'm like, oh no. So I slept with an iron crowbar and to this day, I still sleep with an iron crowbar next to my bed thinking the fairies are going to come take me away.
Well, I mean, it's good if you have to pry open a window or something, too. You know,
that's a very good tool to have. But
yes,
I mean,
it is.
Yeah.
It is.
But I digress. So these people still believe, and even me to this day, and how many people actually take these fairy mounds and stuff seriously, like we were just talking about. How many people take that so seriously? So once upon a time ago, people thought that there was ways to protect yourself magically against fairies, minus taking an iron crowbar and whacking one upside its head.
A little tiny mouse looking thing you're going to whack with a
just
big
whop
crowbar.
It. What's up?
Maybe a shoe would work better for that.
There's no iron in it. Do you have iron shoes, Pat?
You can get them that have the thing by the foot. So
isn't that steel toe boots?
Oh yeah. Same difference though, right?
It's not an iron toe. You need the lore calls for iron or salt or charcoal, I guess. There's we were talking a couple weeks ago.
You can put charcoal on shoes.
Well, no. I just imagine like a fae thing invades Pat's house and Pat's like, I'm ready, and just takes off a shoe and is just going to go charge into combat.
You do know that I don't kill bugs or anything like that, right?
Well, I mean, I'm assuming so with your druidistic background. Probably, you know, you don't want to kill things, but.
But still to this day, I refuse.
Well, so that's a karma
90%
thing.
Of the time. I mean, like if a mosquito is biting me, I'm gonna swat at it. But I was going to say with the belief thing, I mean, I would say that there's probably a large percentage of people that do believe, but to a smaller degree. Like it's something in the back of your head that just says, don't do this, do this, because you never know.
So if you saw a circle of mushrooms, would you cross in front of it? I'm just going.
I hate mushrooms.
But would you cross it knowing fully aware what the lore calls for? Would you be like, ooh, I probably shouldn't do that?
That I wouldn't care about.
So you would cut right through a circle of mushrooms.
Show me one. Let's do it.
I've never seen one in person.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, let's do it right now. I will do it.
And then that's the last time you ever see Pat from Ghostly.
I was also the one that challenged the shadow people to come visit me. And they haven't yet, so just so
we
you know.
We just have to get you in the right area.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go collect the collect that $1 million, but that's a story for another time. So anyway, people like these ancient pagans and these Celtic people had to come up with something because they believed that their kids were being kidnapped by fairies and being replaced by fairies. Like shape-shifting ones. So that's like a big bit of lore.
Yeah.
They would take your child, take it back to their realm, torture him, and eat him.
Yeah.
Or make them their own. It just depends on the story. If you're talking about Jareth the Goblin King, he wanted to keep it to make it into a fairy, but most of the time they wanted a fairy to be born here, so they raise it and, you know, kind of populate. So these people truly believe that's what was going on. So they were trying to come up with rituals, and they were trying to come up with magic beliefs, which is where the idea of the first bits of what are you going to do with the tooth come from. So their thought process is that a child is more protected when all of their teeth are intact. They believe that the best times to kidnap a child was at infancy when their teeth didn't come in, or at young adulthood. I shouldn't say young adulthood, at young childhood, when their first of their baby teeth would come out. And that's the idea, is that you're more inept not to be kidnapped if you had a full mouth of teeth. Wow. And when you lose a tooth, you lose a little bit of that power. So if the fae didn't come and take your tooth, didn't come take you when you were toothless, they may come back for you now. And they may come back for you now because you're a bigger person, you're able to communicate, and you're able to kind of have a little bit more of an impact than an infant would. So their belief was that by taking this tooth out, you become a target. So you would take the tooth and leave it under your pillow so that you would still have that protection there. If a fairy would come and they'd see that you still had the tooth in your...
Like, I could put it in my mouth at any time.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like, hey, what's this? And some of the leaders of these groups and the high priestesses would actually carve like runic symbols from the teeth to wear around the neck, or they'd put it up in the hole.
I have seen that.
Have you?
Yeah. I mean, I've seen pictures of it.
Yeah.
Or maybe in the museum I've seen it. I don't know.
They would carve runic symbols into them, like sigils of protection, and they would leave it as an artifact in the child's room growing up through adulthood, or they would, you know, do other things. Another common thing they would do is actually take the tooth and leave it in a bowl of salt. And that would be like a double whammy of protection, because salt's like a big no-no with the Fae. And that's kind of one of their things. You know, if you have to be well protected against the Fae in any kind of regard. So what's your take on that there, Pat?
You know, I find it really interesting. I also started to think, I know a lot of parents that they don't know what to do with the teeth when they get the teeth. You know, so they keep them in a jar.
Wow.
And I've actually seen people's baby teeth, you know, when they're full adults. And it's kind of creepy, you know? Like
my mom kept my hair for my first haircut. It's in a bag.
Really?
Yeah, true. She has that.
But what do you do with these teeth then if you're a parent?
A symbol of eternal youth.
I mean, do you flush them? Do you throw them in the garbage? What do you do with these things?
Remind me. I'm going to ask my mom that. I'd be like, Mom, what did you do with my teeth?
Yeah.
She probably just threw it in the garbage. Like, I don't want to deal with this.
Right? Yeah.
My mom was a school nurse, so she didn't want to handle any of that disgusting stuff more than she had to. If she saw that, she's like, ugh.
Yeah, but I think that's really interesting that they would... Like, I love studying different religions and looking at why things occur. Mm-hmm. And when a child would lose its tooth, there was a chance for infection.
Right.
So children would die sometimes during their childhood by losing teeth. And I just think it's really interesting some of the methods that they would use to preserve these teeth. The salt would definitely preserve a tooth for a long time.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's a really cool story.
So, in all reality, there was no singular one fae creature that is tied to what we know as now as the tooth fairy. It's all kinds of fae that were attracted to a child losing its tooth. People created the image to help. Now, just remember, if your child loses its tooth, it's possible that you may just end up losing the whole child. So maybe, just maybe, you should probably put that tooth under that pillow for protecting against the Fae.
Wow.
Do you like that? See? So I had one couple quick things to ask you before we wrap up here, Pat.
Oh, sure, yeah.
One is, that we're going to take a quick break because we're going to get an inconclusion going back and forth. And because this is the podcast episode and I'm not dealing with a live show.
Oh, yeah.
I can actually take a break and insert. You can. I can take a break, insert a bumper and all that fun stuff.
You could take a break where they wouldn't even know you.
I could have been sitting here recording this entire episode without my shoes on or something.
You left your shoes on, though, right?
Oh, absolutely. I didn't. Yeah.
Good. Just making sure.
I could have taken my pants off and done this whole episode with my pants on.
Please leave your pants on.
I did. There's ladies in the house. I'm not going to do that.
Okay.
Man.
All right.
But anyway, we're going to take a little break. And then when we come back, we're going to get the in-conclusion story of the Tooth Fairy and all of that fun stuff.
All right.
Welcome to Ghostly.
Pat, what are you doing?
What? I want people to know that we're a podcast that takes a deep dive into some of the scariest ghost stories.
But we don't do the creepy voices or weird sound effects. We debate the ghost stories. And aren't you supposed to be the skeptic?
I am, but they'll find that out once they listen.
Look, all you have to do is tell them to listen to Ghostly, and that our listeners get to decide which stories are real.
And which stories are just old folklore.
Exactly.
Download Ghostly wherever you find great podcasts.
Oh, jeez. Oh.
And we're back. It's really strange to physically say I took a break because when I do the live radio, Count Panic's like, if you ever wanted to take a break, I'm like, no. Paranormal radio shows don't take breaks, but since this is the podcast only episode, I could logistically do that.
Well, podcasters don't cry. That's the thing.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
But do radio people cry?
Maybe.
I've never cried.
You've never cried?
Oh, I've cried. You've never cried?
I used to cry once a month. I would make myself cry once a month just to get those emotions out.
Sure. Yes, I cry, but I wouldn't say I ever cry about my show.
Do you ever cry about your teeth?
Tooth pain, maybe once or twice.
How about the fae?
Oh, man. When I was a little boy, I'll tell you, I've probably spent more times than I care to admit, like staying up at night being like, oh, no. I'm going to get taken. So I start sleeping.
Well, my father would tell me that he was going to sell me to the gypsies. And so growing up.
I want to point out real quick that we are not derogatory against the gypsy community.
Not at all. No. Not at all. But I had no idea that it was a joke, that he was joking with me. Also, he had a tattoo of a skull on his arm from when he was in the service, and he would show me this as a kid and say, that was your mother before I met her. And so I was a little naive kid. So
you thought your dad married a skeleton or dug up a body?
I was afraid I was going to get sold off, and I didn't know what a gypsy was or anything like this, and I was like, this is just...
madness.
Like, why would you do that to me?
I think parents tell their kids some wild things,
right?
Growing up, my great uncle Eddie, he was a wheelchair bound older man. He was a sweet guy, but he always said that he had a gorilla in the closet. It was a gorilla or a dummy. And if you went, it was the dummy. There was a neighborhood man that said he had a gorilla in the closet, okay. But it was the dummy. There was a dummy that he said would come to life and get you. It was like a mannequin. And one day it was like in this back hall, and their family was strange. They're good people, but like my Aunt Alice and them, they would cover their couches with plastic.
Well, yeah, that's like old school thing.
Exactly,
man.
But there was this back room, and he said if you ever went in the back room, the dummy would get you. And I remember one time me and my cousins got brave enough to go back there, and I kid you not, there's an actual dummy in that closet.
Oh,
from
my
it.
God.
He was a ventriloquist, I guess, once upon a time ago.
Oh, that's
and
crazy.
And so he kept his ventriloquist dummy in that room, so we opened it up, and we're like, oh!
So is that how you got this fear of dolls?
No, I told my origin story of how I had the fear of dolls 2 episodes ago.
Oh, I must have missed that, but I'm going to go back and listen to that.
It's the story of the movie Pinocchio's Revenge. That's how the fear of dolls came out.
Oh, my God.
I'm not afraid. Oh, you've actually seen that movie?
Yeah.
You were the second person I've ever met that has actually seen that.
I mean, I don't remember much about it, but yeah, I've seen it.
Since you're here, I'll go over the story just this one more time, and I'll never tell it again on the show. But
you promise?
I promise.
Okay.
In the 90s, we had a video rental store that we'd go and rent our movies from, and long story short, there was this movie what there was the cover of the movie sitting on the movie store shelf, and I never saw the movie. My mom was very liberal in the way she raised me. My mom wanted us to know ghost stories, and she wanted us to know about the paranormal because she didn't want us to ever be afraid of these things. And I ended up with some unwhelming fear of the Fae anyway.
With the crowbar by your bed every night.
But my mom was like, no, you're stronger than most of those things out there, so don't be afraid of things that go bump in the night. So she wanted us to not be afraid of these things, so she exposed us to them.
That's awesome.
And it's a good way, and it's actually going to a good segment into what we're going to talk about next, but there was this cover of this movie that scared me so bad, and my mom's like, yeah, you're not renting this movie. Mm. Because the cover scared me, and this movie was called Pinocchio's Revenge. As an adult, I went and saw it finally. It was uploaded on YouTube. I was in college, and I watched it, and that movie is so bad.
Yeah.
It's so bad, but that movie legitimately caused my fear of dolls for my entire life is because of that cover, the cover of Pinocchio's Revenge.
So is it any doll, or is it just the creepy-looking dolls?
It's all dolls to an extent. It's not like if you had a Steve Urkel doll, I'm probably not going to be afraid of the Steve Urkel doll. Do you actually have one kicking right over there?
If you look in that cabinet over there, there are several dolls.
I try to avoid.
Porcelain?
No.
The kind that you like?
No, those are the worst.
Those are the ones that are over
I
there.
Didn't even notice that was in there. Thanks for pointing that out to
you
me.
You have little faith, Bob.
Is that cabinet locked?
No. No, it is not.
Oh, man, I got nothing.
And we do not have, like, a priest come and bless the house every week or anything.
Are you plugging your episode this week on the show?
Maybe.
So anyway, so my mother would expose us to these things. My mother was very traditional in the way she raised us. We always, you know, and my father, too. They told us stories about the Bible. They told us stories, ghost stories, and they told us stories about monsters and stuff like that. And I was a big whore.
Well, the Bible could be a huge ghost story.
Oh, the Bible. Really the Bible does have, like, legitimate ghost stories.
It does.
And there's a lot of paranormal aspects to the Bible.
Yeah.
You look at the story of Lazarus, that is, without a doubt, you know, that is definitely a story. But, I mean, we grew up with stuff like that.
Yeah.
And the one thing my parents did teach us, and if you guys have your kids back listening, just turn them away now. I'll give you guys a quick second, but a trigger warning to parents who are trying to raise their kids on beliefs, is the idea of Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny, and stuff like that, and the Tooth Fairy especially. And now, the fact that the Tooth Fairy doesn't actually derive from one specific creature, is it ethically sound to raise your children on this belief of something that the Coca-Cola company created? Or if you're going to teach them anything, should you be teaching them the old pagan ways and say, we're going to put this, this tooth under your pillow to protect you from things that may come kidnap you? Where do you draw the line? And do you just kind of stop teaching it? Because on the Bob After Dark, I try to tell everybody the reason why we talk about things outside of ghost stories is because there's a lot of legends in the world. And I really believe that we should still be talking about them, but we should still be teaching them. But should we still be practicing things like that? And I was hoping I could get your input on it. Now, you don't have children, right? Am I right?
No, I do not have children.
I don't have children either. But if I did, I think I would raise them the same way I was. And that's teaching them things like magical things and stuff like that. And fantastical things, Santa Claus, Easter Bunny, Tooth Fairy, stuff like that.
I have a hard time with this because I know you want a child to still have some magic in their life.
Sure.
And that's, you know, part of the reason why you would teach them about Santa Claus and stuff. And you want them to be excited around different times of the year, you know, and this gives them excitement. If it was just like, we're going to go to church and we're going to sit there and watch a, you know, sermon for an hour and a half, that's not exciting to a kid.
Right.
To me it is, but to the kid it's not. So I understand the premise behind it, but would we be a better society if we stop lying to our kids?
Nah. I think there's a level of learning to it. And I feel like teaching the kids the lore behind what they're doing, there's a good history lesson there. You know, the idea behind Santa Claus is that there's, you know, actual figures out there that people, that it was actually existing, that were doing wonderful things for kids and stuff once upon a time ago. There's actual lore to it. Now, and if you get older and you teach your kids, well, the Tooth Fairy is very much not a thing, but people used to believe that your teeth would protect you from things and they would lay them out under the pillow. I'm sure most people probably don't even know that story about the Tooth Fairy, but I think it's important to teach kids this because there's a history behind it. There's a culture behind it. There's traditions I feel like that need to be kept going or they die. And especially when I appreciate your guys' Christmas episode so much because you guys talk about the idea of talking about ghost stories around Christmas time. Because
yeah.
If you don't do that, the tradition dies. And I think that's probably the worst fate out of anything is when a legend or a culture thing just dies. And that's why I think we need to keep doing what we do. And that's why I keep talking about what I talk about.
Yeah. I mean, I see a value to it, but I also know how I felt when I found out from the neighbor that there was no such thing as Santa or the Easter Bunny or Tooth Fairy. I felt like my parents were lying to me. Mm. And like, what else were they lying to me about? Were they lying to me about church? Were they lying? And that's probably what started me on my skeptical path, really, is the idea that I had to question things because I didn't know what was real or what wasn't at that point.
I think there's... Sure.
I mean, I'm an unusual example, so...
You're just an unusual person.
Sometimes. Sometimes I'm pretty typical, but yeah.
I really think so. And especially in the story like the Tooth Fairy, there's legit origins behind that people don't know, and maybe you should look into it. Maybe you should be teaching your kids these things.
Not about the scary troll. That would, man, if I heard that when I was a kid.
I'm no psychologist, and I'm no child psychologist, and I'm sure there's probably somebody. No, I'm not on that path. I'm on a path to do this full time. I'm not going back to school ever.
Ever, wow. Unless you have to continue to learn.
Oh,
continue
to learn is fine. Of course. And if I went back, I'd go get my doctorate in parapsychology.
Yeah?
I would, absolutely. Oh, I've looked into it. But that'd be like the bare minimum of what I would do. But no, I don't know how it affects like childhood brain growth and this and that. But I really believe you should be teaching your kids these things. And do I think you should be doing this as a lesson, like the troll story? Like, should you be doing it to scare your kids? I don't know. There's probably a limit to that, but keeping that childhood whimsical nature alive is important, and I believe that keeping culture and traditions are alive. And that's my whole take on it. So Tooth Fairy is not so much of the bad thing as I think it is important. And now then you get into the religious debate of, is my very religious mother or father going to teach me about witchcraft and teach me about pagan roles? Probably not, but I don't know. I think it's important for kids to learn everything. I think it's important for all of us to learn something.
Well, it would be great if we all looked at the history of everything to realize that if a lot of these histories, I mean, a lot of these like traditions that we have are based on pagan traditions, maybe we're not all that different.
Oh, here comes the moral of the story.
I mean, seriously, like, we are all the same.
Oh, man.
And we have traditions that we all celebrate. Some of them seem, you know, pretty bizarre to people that are outside, but they all stem from some kind of pagan belief. Mm. So maybe we're not different.
And that's where you turn off the lights and the soft music comes on and the credits roll.
Well, I was hoping, yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
And there's the episode finale. Pat, I really appreciate you letting me come on and do this evening, and I hope you actually had fun.
I did, yeah. I always have fun talking to you.
Did you learn something?
I did. I learned that you sleep with the crowbar by your bed.
I do. It's a true story.
So, yeah, if ever, you know, we go to a convention or something, do you bring the crowbar with you?
I do not.
Oh, so what happens to the Fae then when you're at a hotel room?
I have other means.
Oh, okay.
Iron hangers.
Oh, nice. Okay.
It's a real thing. I have an actual iron hanger I hang my clothes up with.
Or maybe a big iron needle.
I'm not a Fae doctor.
Have you talked about that in the show?
I have not. Do you want me? I'll talk about it real quick. Did you know that there are people out there that practice this culture called being a Fae doctor? And it's the same concept of a witch doctor. A witch doctor is somebody that conjures up cures for ailments using holistical means. Mm-hmm. But they also keep the paranormal and supernatural at bay, and they're kind of more or less like the equalizer when it comes to witching stuff too. They're very much a neutral kind of a party.
Yeah.
The Fae doctors are more or less the same thing, except they travel around to places where there's like high kidnapping rates, and they go and investigate the area to make sure that there's no like Fae problems in the world. And they try to keep it a level playing field. I actually met one last year when we did our panel at Comic-Con Revolution. People were asking us questions, and somebody brought up the Fae, and I'm like, oh yeah, we talk about the Fae on the show. We just finished up Fae Lore Month not that long ago. And this girl comes up to me after the panel, and she's like, what do you know about the Fae? I'm like, oh, I know a little bit about the Pooka and, you know, the Banshees, the Leprechauns, you know, and I study a little bit. And she's like, I'm a Fae doctor. I'm like, the hell's a Fae doctor? And she's like, oh, you know, I'm an author. I write books and I travel all over the world, and I specifically go and move in places where there's a high kidnapping rate or places where I think there's an imbalance and influx of Fae problems. And I go and I do meditations. I do my own craft. And when worst comes to worst, and she opens up her coat pocket and she pulls out this long iron needle, like almost like a nail. And she's like, this is what I use when things get really bad.
Wow.
And she's told me, she's like, I have seen them. I have dealt with leprechauns. I have dealt with banshees. I've dealt with flying fae. I'm the one that they come to when they need to communicate about human problems. And I'm the one that sends them packing when they come through. And I'm like,
so she's the liaison.
She is the liaison between the human realm and the fae world.
Wow.
And I was like, that was my reaction. I'm like, what? Yeah. I had no idea. But yeah,
I didn't either. Yeah.
They're like a dying breed. They're a very small group of people that believe in.
I really think you should become one.
No, I'm too afraid.
But you have what they do not have. You have a proton pack.
I separate the Ghostbusters thing from Bob After Dark, Pat.
I know you do, but you have that ability, though. You have that other side, that, you know, that alter ego.
That is a prop, Pat.
Whoa, wait, no, hold on. Now you're shattering all my beliefs here.
I probably, the one thing I have that actually works as my Ghostbuster is my mouth and my sarcastic humor. That's the real link between me and the Ghostbusters. So, Pat, tell me a little bit more about Ghostly Podcast before we go. How do people find you? What do you talk about in Ghostly for like the three people that listen to my show that don't know who you are? Because I preach your show a lot.
Yeah, I preach yours too. You're mentioned a lot in the next episode.
That's
coming
good.
Up.
I'm sure you're probably picking on me relentlessly.
Maybe not. So Ghostly is a podcast where we debate ghost stories. We take a deep dive, look at the complete history. We go over all the evidence. It's basically taking a ghost story to court, and the judge is you, the listener. You get to go vote on how you feel, if you feel it's real or not.
And Pat is the prosecuting attorney. Pat comes with a suitcase. He's prosecuting.
Sometimes
and Rebecca
you have to.
Is the sweet defense attorney. Before I go, because I've always wanted to ask you this.
Yeah.
And I've never got a chance to, because I've been on Ghostly several times, but every time I've ever been on Ghostly, it was like it's more of like an event thing.
Okay.
So this is the one time I get to sit down with you for a show, and I'm not going to turn this into an interview segment because we're going to cut it off here in a moment. But what is the one ghost story in the entire world that you as a skeptic sit down and question, if there is one, where you're like, maybe. Or one that you've done on the show. I've listened to all of your episodes, but is there one where you're like, oh yeah.
You know, Bachelor's Grove, we had an experience that we didn't talk about on the show.
Oh, do I get a Bob After Dark inside scoop?
Do you want one?
Absolutely. We got time. This is a podcast, baby.
So we went to Bachelor's Grove, and this was like, I had gone there as a kid.
Sure.
When Bachelor's Grove is a cemetery that's pretty old, and it's in Midlothian, and it was difficult to get to when I was a kid.
It's probably the most famous haunted cemetery if not in the Chicagoland area, I would argue in the Midwest, and I would almost argue probably the most haunted and famous cemetery in the country.
Yes.
Yep.
When I was a kid, you know, it was an adventure. You had to like climb over, you know, trees that had fallen over and stuff. And
sure.
Nobody took care of it, so it was like you just were in the middle of the woods, and there were some tombstones and stuff.
Sure.
You know? But we had gone back. We met with Carl with a K and Wendy from the Path to Bachelor's Grove, and they asked if we wanted to come back, and they like to barbecue there.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, but right outside the cemetery, like, area, which you don't really know where the cemetery is there. They're just guessing.
Sure.
But we said we would come back if we could do an interview. We got an interview in the first episode, but the second one was so much more. I had a lot more questions. And we went down the path. Now, it was in the, I want to say it was in like November or something. It should have been really cold. It was probably, I would say, 55, 60 degrees out that day for mm-hmm. some reason. So we thought it was a perfect day to go there. And we went out there, and me and Rebecca brought Rebecca's brother. His name is Austin. And Austin is a really cool guy. Very, you know, he knows his stuff. He, you know, nobody worries about Austin, okay? Austin took our video camera and went out into the woods. He had this urge when he got out there. We had this whole plan of what we were going to do. But he took my video camera and just walked out in the woods by himself. And so we were kind of worried about him. It took, like, he was gone for over an hour. Mm. Just wandering around. And the woods are not that big. They look big, but they're not that big there.
Yep.
So we had our interview. We talked. Austin finally came back, and he said that he was very disorientated by the woods, which often happens there. It's one of those kind of places that if you go out alone, there's a chance you're going to get so lost that you're not going to know what to do, and you're just going to have to shout out for people to find you. But what happened that really spooked me, so it's 55, 60 degrees out.
Yeah.
But we were freezing. Like, we were beyond cold. I don't think
microclimate.
Right? But we went right by the cemetery gates, and there was a puddle of water. Just to let you know how warm it should have been there. I looked at this puddle of water, and I watched as it froze in front of me. Like it knew that I was walking there.
Yeah.
And that freaked me out. And we got back to the car, and it was back to 55, 60 degrees. But before that, it was like 20 degrees. I don't know what happened in the short period of time, but something happened, and that puddle froze up right in front of me, and it creeped me out. Mm. It made me believe that maybe there's something there.
Oh, look at that.
Maybe.
Maybe. Just maybe. Is that what you give like a 5 out of 10 on? get to do the ghostly thing.
This, oh, geez. So I'd probably go as high as 3.
Oh.
That's the highest I've gone in a long time, Bob.
That's fine.
And that would be that 0 is total BS.
Nonsense, yeah.
And 10 is absolutely, that is proven fact.
Probably have more 10s than I care about. All right. So where can people listen to Ghostly at?
Yeah, you can find us on ghostlypodcast.com. Mm-hmm. You can listen to episodes right from there, or you can click on the Find Us button and find us on any place where you listen to podcasts, like Bob After Dark.
Yeah, I'm on pretty much everything that you can find Ghostly. And
yeah,
I just want to say thank you, because it's kind of hard to ever be able to tell somebody how you feel about them. Well, at least maybe not for me, but thank you so much, Pat, for letting me come on the show. For letting me come into your studio, and thanks for sitting in and coming and doing the show with me. I don't know how I would do a Bob After Dark solo act these days. I probably could if I really, really had to. But
go back to the closet?
Oh, my God. Don't stop. Why do you always have to bring up those days? Why does somebody have to bring up those days? But I just want to say thank you so much. And, you know, people don't people don't realize how much like I really look up to Pat and the Ghostly Podcast.
Oh man.
Because you guys like,
we're the same.
No. You guys are like my, you guys are my goals. It's like, if I could be like Ghostly, that's who I want to be like.
You could be like Ghostly and still not make any money or anything.
Well, look, I'm not stopping until I make enough money to where I could do this full time.
So you got to go beyond me then.
Well, you're a good place to start. If I can end up there.
Maybe.
Okay, so everybody can listen to Ghostly wherever you listen to podcasts at. And Pat, do you have any kind words to the audience before we hang up for the episode?
You know, I really appreciate you allowing me to be the only guest on the show. I feel a little bit lost without Panic here. You know,
I feel like
been a staple.
I don't have a phone call. Usually somebody will call me for the show.
I usually will call if I can. But, you know, I want to thank you guys for supporting Bob in all that he does. I truly believe that you have some of the best fans that I've ever met. They are very supportive of you and everything that you do. And knowing that I'm a skeptic, they still laugh with me. They still joke with me. And that's hard when it's coming from an end where it's all believers.
Well, I have some skeptical fans, I'm sure.
Well, I think that skepticism is needed.
Oh, absolutely.
Even if you're a believer.
Skepticism is the most important thing you could possibly have, I think, as a paranormal enthusiast.
Yeah.
Because if you're just going in blind believing everything you could possibly imagine, you are either going to be considered a loon. You may actually drive yourself mentally insane. And I'm not just saying that as like an over-exaggerative statement. I'm being serious.
Yeah.
So I appreciate you being a skeptic. Plus, you keep me on my toes. Pat messages me things like, oh, we're doing the story of The Conjuring this week, and what if I was to tell you that this was this? And it gives me a second. I'm like, I have to respond to this logically. He's calling me out in the logical sense. I got to legitimately.
And there were no typos in your response. I just want to say that. You actually thought about what you were saying. You took the time to type it out.
Yeah.
And that's great. We can do that, you know, at the drop of a dime. You've asked me questions. I mean, I try to look at everything with an open mind, but I usually end up on the non-believer side, but that's okay. I mean, there's room for all of us.
Excellent. Pat, I have to do this because you're on Bob After Dark, and this is like my one time I could do this. Pat, can you rate the Tooth Fairy for me, please? Do you think that there's a creature coming and taking your teeth?
I'm going to give that a zero.
I'm also going to give that a zero.
You're going to give it
I'm
a zero?
I'm giving it a zero.
Whoa.
Now, stories
is
come
from...
Is
that your first zero?
That is, no, the Mobile, Alabama Leprechaun.
Okay.
No, that's not my first zero. Do I think that there's probably some truth to something out there? Maybe especially once upon a time ago, these people had these beliefs? Yeah, I'm going to buy into it that... It was something. Was it a fey creature coming and kidnapping kids? I don't know. Maybe so. But the actual nice lady with a wand coming and casting a thing, or Larry the Cable Guy was in that movie.
That's right.
Okay, folks, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Bob After Dark. And I usually like to end this thing by telling everybody good night, and I will. But I just want to, before I do anything, I just want to wish you guys to please be safe, please be healthy, and please take care of yourselves. Your well-being is my number one concern being on the show. And just because my convention appearances are getting canceled right now doesn't mean I'm not thinking about you guys, and don't think like I'm not going to do everything in my power to come see you guys at my shows, because I care about you guys, and I really do love you. Take care of yourselves.
And wash your hands.
Wash your hands, and go check on your elderly neighbors. Like,
yes.
go say hi. Make sure they're doing okay. I'm not. Yeah. That's probably.
And bring them some toilet paper.
Yeah, exactly.
It isn't going to hurt you. Just bring them a roll.
Please take care of everybody. Take care of your elderly, and just right now, what I think above all is we have to realize that we're all in the same boat that is currently sinking. So
we're all the same.
Take care of one another. All right, Mom and Dad, I know you're probably not listening to this, and I usually do this one live, but good night, Mom and Dad. I hope you have sweet dreams. And Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I hope you have the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. And remember, the most important rule of Bob After Dark is not all who wander are lost. As above, so below. Good night, everybody.
Stay ghostly.
Memoriam Development.